Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlow. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Waking up. I don't normally get asked that question by you in the morning. Sorry. It froze.
That's okay. I have a story today about a client named Joel. He's over Zoom, so we can see each other.
Okay, and you have named him Joel.
I've named him Joel. Sorry. We're so many, what are we, almost 600 shows in here?
So for some, it's their first episode.
But right? Yeah, so that's fair to say that we never say a client's name and that there's confidentiality. So the made-up name is Joel. And he asks me if I could just give him any information on a person named Barry. And he says, Karen, I think it's called a soul contract, but I don't know because I was just told by somebody else who booked the appointment for me to say it. And then he said, but I was also told to say that I'm open to everything that you get about Barry. And he says, so that's how I was told to word it, and I've written it down. He says, so can you just start? And I said, yeah. So I ask for Barry's permission for soul contract, and I get yes. And I get a real wholehearted yes.
Okay, can we pause? Mm-hmm. I think it's important to note, because some people would be like, what do you mean you ask permission mm-hmm. for the soul contract? Some clients do ask for soul contracts about a human that's still alive, mm-hmm. and that might be crossing massive boundaries, mm-hmm. Because that alive person, their soul might not be consenting to it. That might not be information that any human is privileged to have just yet. And then also the same can be true from the other side that, again, we're not necessarily allowed to have all the information for reasons unknown to us, obviously. So we still have to ask for access to information mm-hmm. and we can get shut down.
Mm-hmm. And then like Joel has already given me permission to be wide open. So I have full access and permission to connect to his spirit in case the contract with Barry has anything to do with Joel.
Okay, fair. I think that's still a really neat way to word it because you can have permission from the human and the soul can still say, nope. Like I've done tons of channeling, and I'm sure you have, where a client will ask a question about themselves and their own soul is like, you're being fucking lazy and you're looking for external validation and an out on something. And this is yours to discover.
Yes.
And it's like, just because the human is asking sometimes for the shortcut, we don't get
let the load of stress off.
Yeah. We don't get that permission from the soul all the time just because mm-hmm. the human asks.
Mm-hmm. I like that you're explaining that because then I want to go a little bit further. Then when the client is angry, because this is not Joel now, we're just talking about general. When the client is then angry at me and says, you didn't get the answers, you were vague, you didn't know what you were doing, I don't take any of it personally because I know that the spirit guides are the ones that have said, the soul has said, no, you don't get the answer to you. We're not giving it to you to give to them. And instead, the person can be mad at the channeler and not understand really what we're doing.
Yeah, fair. And for anyone who's listening who just has the most like purest of intentions and can't wrap their head around why this would happen, let's illustrate some examples.
Oh, like, yeah, okay.
I've had a lot of people who have sat in front of me with so much distress being like, what should I do with my career? What field should I go into? What does my soul contract say about what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Mm-hmm. And I get the denial. So it's not technically a block, it's a denial. And what information comes from that is, you know, typically things like you have a ton of perfectionism, you have massive people pleasing and fear of disappointing others. Mm-hmm. So you want someone to tell you what you're going to do so that you don't have to think for yourself or work through the discomfort, or it can't be your fault if it doesn't work out.
Bingo.
So much comes through in terms of information about their character. right? Or their patterns, for mm-hmm. example. And I mean, those are validations, right? Typically, I mean, I've had a lot of good response from people where they're like, oh, that's true. It's true. And it's like, I can empathize with the stress and wanting the answer like that. Mm-hmm. Cause I think many of us would like to just be on our way kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the information sometimes about our patterns becomes the most important thing that gets drawn to our attention. Right. And yeah. I've also had people ask about soul contracts with a relationship to another person. And I've been flat out denied where I've been told you use information to manipulate the other person yeah. and that you want them to stay, but it's in their best interest to leave or something to that effect. Right. Mm-hmm. Or you're afraid what life is going to look like without them. So you're here asking that question because you want to know that this is what is supposed to be. Right? Mm-hmm. Instead of potentially big change. And so again, the added information that comes along with why they are denied becomes really important. And if that person is not open to receiving information and seeing themselves clearly, that's usually when we get the reaction of anger.
Mm-hmm.
If people truly are open, they're quite delighted, even if it brings them feelings of sadness or shame or disappointment with the other information, because it's like, okay, that sucks, but I'm willing to see myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. So back to Joel and this story. So I said to Barry, okay, what do you want to offer here? And he says, well, he says, I'm going to say some things to give like validations. And he says, but also that they're facts about who I was. And it's just hopefully as I say some of these things, it's going to give him some answers as to what he's looking for. Barry says, I was the type of person that would walk into a room and assess it. And the first thing I looked for was women. He said, I wanted to look around the room and I quickly could be assessing to see if I thought the women were going to challenge me at all. And how I was going to handle it. So if somebody looked like she was going to give me a little kickback, he says, then I was going to walk in and kind of like really like make sure that I made eye contact with her.
Posture.
Oh, yeah, very much. And he says, so there was lots about my body cues, the way I knew how to stand.
I will say I do love that he sees women as a problem. Oh, are the women going to give me a problem? Fucking right.
And then he says, and then I would position myself so that I could be directly facing them if I needed to be in a second to be able to kind of like put them right into their place. And he says, and then I would turn around and I would look and I would see where the men are and I would assess them. And he says, and I would figure out by their body posture, the way they talked or whatever it is that they were doing, I just would look at them and make my assessment as to who in the room I was going to have to deal with. And if I felt that none of the men were very assertive, then I could kind of like calm down a little bit and be a little more friendly and jokey. But if not, then I would come into the room and I would make sure that I spoke louder than the other men in the room. And that was my cue to let the other men in the room know I'm the loudest. Therefore, I'm the most dominant.
Amazing. Okay. So one of the things we ask at the beginning of these shows is that you find pieces of yourself in all of the stories. And what I'm very much hoping at this point in the show is that every single listener, male or female, or however you identify, is asking yourself, who am I in that room? Am I someone who would give him a fucking problem? Meaning I'm going to stand up and speak and have integrity. Am I a man who is going to be in that room and support the women labeled a problem? Or am I as weak as this little Barry man?
Right?
Because that a man who assesses if a woman is going to give him a problem is a weak-ass man.
Yeah.
And he is looking for other weak-ass men.
Exactly.
To make sure he's in a safe environment for his disgusting behavior.
Okay, so this is where Joel says to me, huh? He says, you're describing him. So when I took all this information in from Barry and I give it to Joel, he goes, this is what I'm looking for. He goes, I just need you to continue. And he says, I'm not saying it in a way that I'm testing you. He said, I just need more answers. So he says, Karen, I don't want you to take it personally. And I said, oh, I'm not. I'm just simply going to tell you what Barry says, and you can ask all the questions that you want. And I said, as a matter of fact, the more questions you ask, the better you get it is for your session, because your needs are going to be met. So he said, well, just go on for now, because this is the exact topic. So I said, Barry, what else do you want to say? He goes, yeah. He says, that thing about looking at other men in the room. He said, I had to assess quickly because I wanted to know if there was going to be any man in the room, i.e. someone's partner, or if it was in a work environment, maybe someone's boss that was going to have their back. And he says, and I would go right at them first to put them in their place. Because if he makes a criticism towards this man or any of these men, then he knows that there's no way that they're going to defend any of the women in the room.
Because why?
Because in the patriarchal lineup, they are not alpha.
And they will need to earn his approval because he's started with disapproval.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, I like that you said that. I wasn't thinking of that. So thank you for adding it. Say it again.
Yeah, it's really gross. But if he makes any kind of dig that allows another man to see, I don't approve of you, or I'm mm-hmm. going to withhold approval of you, mm-hmm. then it sets off this like instinctual but also subconscious need for approval now. So now that man who has been undermined is going to seek the approval through a joke, aligning with that man in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form, which typically means he has to abandon self first, mm-hmm. and then likely maybe a partner, a coworker, or someone in the vicinity.
Interesting, because Barry also says then that he wanted to see that as he attacked a woman in the room, just to set the atmosphere and the hierarchy of who's in control in the room. He wanted to see what men would try to step up or wouldn't, or which ones would join in the joke, which ones would join in the laughter.
Yeah, and if you visualize this room with this behavior, he's seeing, okay, who can I isolate, and how much of an us-them imbalance does it create, right? And if it's that people are going to stand up for, and he ends up feeling lopsided and isolated, he's sussed out the room and figures out how he needs to then either do damage repair, or if it's lopsided and people are going to earn his approval and he can truly isolate whoever he's attacked, then he knows, okay, I'm in power.
And he uses criticism disguised as jokes in order to get the men in the room, and possibly some of the women, but in particular, he needs the men to laugh at the criticism towards the women in particular. But also it could be that he targets another man in the room to make sure that he feels disarmed mm-hmm. in any of his power.
Yeah, I'll say, I think disarmed is a really important way to word it, but I'll also throw in off-center, right? Mm-hmm. Destabilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he becomes known, Barry becomes known as really funny because he uses jokes, he uses humor, he wants to get laughter, even if it's forced laughter, fearful laughter, anger laughter, abandonment laughter. I mean, I guess we can call the laughter all kinds of things because underneath it are all these dynamics going on, right? But as long as he's getting laughter, he's known as and has the reputation for being the funny person, even though it's also an abusive person. But nobody says Barry's abusive. They all say he's funny.
Mm-hmm. He's probably a good guy because yes. of his humor as well.
Yeah, and he's the one that brings all the laughter. They look forward to when he arrives. And it's through this kind of conditioning and this type of humor in particular that he has control over everybody. And he does it every time he walks in, whether it's it doesn't matter if it's a lunchroom at work, if it's office space, if it's in front of clients, if it's at home, if it's at Christmas, if it's at the golf course.
A funeral.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's in every single place because he has to assert, I'm here. So the volume, the tone of voice, even Barry says to me, I can slow down and speak slowly.
Control.
Yes. Or I can speak really quick like this so that everybody has to try and keep up with what I'm saying. Ha ha ha.
Control.
Right? And then if I speed up and I talk really fast like this, ha ha, and I make a joke, and you guys can't even figure out what my joke was, but you know, because I'm the funny guy, your cue is laugh when I stop speaking. They start laughing and nobody even knows what he'd said. And so Joel has observed that behavior and he is disgusted with Barry. Disgusted. And he's purposefully trying to stay out of that. So he's not laughing. So Barry
is a problem in the room. We like Joel.
Right? And Barry really wants to, or wanted to, assert that. And so I explain all of this to Joel, and he's like, oh my God, Karen. It's so validating to hear that you know it. Are you okay to be my person? Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, Joel, I am often people's only person on earth. I am often the one, the only one in this half hour, 60 minutes, 90 minute session. I'm often the only one that the client actually has who sees the truth. And where they feel uncrazy for that session. And he goes, okay. He goes, this is good. And often I said, oh, there's your breath. There's your breath. I wait to hear you breathe. Because it's a deeper breath. And I don't know what you call it. If you call it the first full breath of life, I don't really know what it is. But there really should be a name to that type of a first breath when you finally know that there's one other person on earth, especially if you don't feel there's ever been any, that really understand what you've been through because of all of the gaslighting of not just Barry, but every other person in that room now. Mm-hmm. Every person who thinks Barry is funny, who thinks he's the leader. And so Barry goes on to talk about how he saw himself. And he says, I need to explain the why. And so Barry talks about his own dad. He says, oh, he says, my dad did these things. And he said, I'm behaving just exactly like my father did because I was one of the guys in the room. I was one of the guys that self-abandoned and laughed when my dad did this shit to my mom, to my sisters, to my brothers, to all of us, big family. Barry had lots of people to do this to. And he said, so I was one of the ones that self-abandoned.
For survival.
Yeah. And he said, like, and I really had no other choice as a kid to do it. I saw other siblings who decided not to, who got beaten, who got hit. And then he starts describing the things that his own father did that Barry did as well. So he describes, and he hated his father for doing them, and then he does them himself. So he starts describing some of them to Joel. I withheld love on purpose as a form of control. I withheld affection. I withheld touch. I withheld hugs. And Joel goes, yes. And I said, he withheld da-da-da-da-da, right? Praise. But I was lavish with criticism. I would give you praise, but only on occasion when it was a behavior that you were doing that I was grooming you to do. Not because you actually did well in something that's just you, right? Maybe you sang something nice or whatever. I'm not gonna say anything about that. But if you do something I groom you to do, yeah, I'll say something about that. And he says, that's what my dad did to me, and I hated him for it. And Joel goes, uh-huh. And he goes, okay. But you can see he's still like, what? And then Barry says, and then I get married and I become a dad, and I do the very same things to have control because I believe that I'm supposed to be the one that has control. Everything's on it's all on me. I have to pay the bills. And Joel goes, no. And Barry goes, well, no, my wife did have a job, but I had to pay the bills.
Okay. Oh, love that discount.
Right? My wife raised the kids with me, but I believed I had to raise them. Mm-hmm. My wife raised the children without me when I wasn't around, and even when I was, but I wanted to watch TV and I wanted to tune out. but I was the one in control. So he says, like, then he starts talking, Barry does, like, about all of these beliefs that he has, even though the beliefs make no sense. Mm-hmm. And so Joel goes, okay, does he explain why? And so he goes, Barry says, well, that's conditioning. He says, those are belief systems. And Joel goes, okay, can you walk me through some of the belief systems? And Barry, and I remember writing them down on the paper. I remember doodling an actual belief system and holding it up so that Joel would have it on the camera during the Zoom meeting, so that at the end, if he wanted to go back, he could slow it down or take pictures or do whatever he wanted, whatever was important for him. So Barry starts writing out what some of his beliefs are, that if I'm being a good husband or a good man, then my children are going to behave well even when I'm not around. So I have to condition this into them so that when I'm not around and they're at a friend's house, this is how they're going to behave. Because I don't want to have to hear from that parent or a coach or a teacher that they didn't behave the way that I wanted them to, that I thought was healthy, that I thought was right. And so Joel goes, okay, this is what I'm here for. He said, I've been trying to figure out the why of everything. And so then Barry says to me, I'm his dad. And I said, I figured eventually that you must be. And he says, did you also figure I'm his boss? And I said, well, I wondered if you were his boss at some point, because there were some things that played out like more in a work environment. But then I could understand that it also could be a family environment. Mm. He goes, Karen, you got all those ideas because I was his boss. He worked in the family business until I died, and he hated me. And I'm dad. And he said, and I tried to also be in his personal life, in his friend group, as a friend, and tried to dominate when his friends were over or when they popped in at work or whatever in the lunchroom to say hi to him. I wanted to make sure that I walked in and I asserted myself again. Mm-hmm. He said, so I looked for every opportunity to put him down. So then Barry says to him, Joel, I'm sorry. I see that you looked at all those things and hated them. And I did that with my own father. And then I had a point to either become like my dad or not. And I became like my dad. And he said, and I hated myself. And he said, and I was ashamed of what I was doing, but I didn't want to do the work to stop it. So I let myself sort of like just go to the end of my life, but feeling filled with shame about it and anger at myself. And he said, but I see that you're not, and that you refuse to do what I did. So you're trying to figure out different ways to be the man in the room that doesn't do or believe in any of the things that I did. And I'm so proud of you. And I want to be with you as you do it, to see what you're doing and to learn, because I'm learning on the other side. But I also want to see how you're learning and be able to celebrate with you as you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Joel said to me, I was not expecting that. Mm-hmm. I came here just to find out the why. And he said, because I just couldn't understand it, because his dad did this and I knew that. So it made no sense to me why he would do the same damn things to me. And he said, but I really appreciate it, Karen. And he said, and I'm going to leave here today knowing that my dad isn't that same person. Mm. And he said, I didn't realize that I also wanted to hear that, and that I wanted to know if there was an opportunity to go through the rest of my life inviting my dad to be part of it, but not struggling with that old version of him around me in my life. I wanted to believe that there could be a different version of him with me each day. And I got that, so thank you.
That's lovely. That's wonderfully healing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.